This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
In a way, every stand-up comedian is an entrepreneur. Especially when starting out, comics must be their own writer, director, manager, agent, and booker. Brooklyn-born Chris DiStefano, who burst onto the scene on MTV's Guy Code, has now been at it for over 10 years. His first hour-long special, Size 38 Waist, premiered in January on Comedy Central, and his weekly interstitial series, Stupid Questions with Chris DiStefano, was just extended for a new batch of episodes. Additionally, he recently signed an overall deal with the network that includes a second hour-long stand-up special, an animated series, and an unscripted series. On this episode of How Success Happens, we explore DiStefano's journey from full-time physical therapist to highly successful comedian. His secret? Credit something he's dubbed graceful bombing. But first, a word from our sponsors. If you have a business or you know someone who does, you probably know that small business owners wear a lot of hats. And some of those hats are totally great. But some, like filing taxes and running payroll, for example, not so great. That's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses. Fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and expert HR support all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your federal, state, and local taxes so you don't have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add on health benefits and even 401ks for your team. Those old-school, clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way modern small businesses work. But Gusto is. So let them wear one of your many hats. You have better things to do. Listeners get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. Try a demo and see for yourself at gusto.com/HSH. That's gusto.com/HSH. Now for our second sponsor. For most of us, the vitamin aisle at the drugstore is a pretty intimidating place. Unless you've done lots of research, it's hard to know which vitamins you need and how many to take. That's why I was very excited to try Care Of, a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. Here's how it works. Head to takecareof.com and take Care Of's online quiz that asks you all about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices. It takes only 5 minutes to find out what specific vitamins and supplements you need, and the quiz is easy and fun. Then your vitamins get delivered right to your door in personalized, easy-to-remember daily packs. It's a super convenient way to get your day off to a healthy start. Something I especially appreciate about Care Of is that they provide all the research behind their vitamin recommendations, backed by a scientific advisory board. Take advantage of this month's special New Year offer. For 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter promo code HSH50. Again, go to takecareof.com and enter the promo code HSH50 for 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins. Your body will thank you. Chris, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us over here.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
We're talking about the idea that, in a way, every stand-up comedian is kind of an entrepreneur, in a sense. I kind of want to hear your story. When did you decide that you wanted to be a stand-up comedian?
I started doing stand-up comedy in 2009. I started doing open mics. I was a physical therapist. And then I wanted to do comedy, so I started, basically moonlighting stand-up comedy at night, physical therapist during the day. And then in about 2013, I made it like my professional career, and I've been doing it professionally since 2013.
So how did that sort of happen? You went to school, obviously, to become a physical therapist, and you're just kind of doing your job, and you were just like, you know what? I don't know if this is really what I want to spend my life doing.
Yeah, well, you know what? I've always wanted to do stand-up comedy, like since I was in my teens. I always wanted to do it. You know, my friends always like, you should do it. And I kind of didn't work up the courage to do it until I was about 24, 25 years old, when I had already gotten my physical therapy license. So I said, you know what, let me just try to, you know, I was basically burning the candles at both ends, being a pediatric physical therapist during the day and stand up through late hours of the night. And then I got an opportunity to take it full time with this show that was on MTV 2. It was called Guy Code, and it got really popular with like high school and college kids. That allowed me to transition into making it my whole career. And, you know, I still have my physical therapy license, and I still, you know, will check in. I'm still friends with some of the other physical therapists I used to work with and check on the status and progress of some of the children I used to treat. So, I'm still somewhat involved in the community, but I haven't actually practiced it since 2013.
Now, do you think that having that license when you first started kind of made you feel a little bit more comfortable about going so out on a limb and trying out the comedy?
I think, yeah, I think kind of for me, you know, some people, you know, you'll hear stories about, you know, people getting into entertainment comedy or acting or something like that, you know, and they felt like their back was against the wall and, you know, they had no money coming in and it was either kind of do or die. And I know that's true for some people. Some of my friends, I know that's how their careers came about. But for me, having a safety net, like I have a doctorate degree in physical therapy and I have my license and I fulfilled like my education, like, you know, my mother was the kind of mother where she was like, you know, you're going to go through graduate school. Like this is what it is. So fulfilling that, never really getting in trouble, like with the law too much, kind of fulfilled my dad's, you know, my dad's requirements. So I feel like by the time I was 24, 25, I was free to do what I wanted to do because I had pleased my parents enough. I pleased myself. I was proud of myself for some of my accomplishments and accolades. And I was like, you know what? Now it's time to live my life for me. And that's what I've been doing ever since. And it's been great. I mean, every day of my life feels like a Sunday afternoon. Like it's like, I feel like I get paid to have fun and it's amazing.
Did your early acts have a lot of like physical therapy jokes?
They did. Yeah. Because you know, you can only talk about, you know, what you know. And now there's obviously a lot less physical, well, there's no physical therapy humor in my stand up at the moment. But I mean, I could always still go back and think about things that I missed and talk about it. Cause I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff that happens when you're a therapist.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now you mentioned that, you know, maybe kind of the comedy bug first bit you or whatever, when you were a teenager. Did you have a specific comedian that you looked up to, or multiple ones?
My favorite comedian, well, first of all, my favorite comedic actor ever was Jim Carrey. I used to love Jim Carrey movies, but I love Sam Kinison. I'm an old school Sam Kinison fan. Bill Burr, I love Bill Burr's comedy. Old school Chris Rock. I always used to love Dave Attell. Dave Attell's probably, you know, I've listened to Legion, I've listened to Skank for the Memories, you know, 1,000 times.
Yep.
He's my favorite comic, and Colin Quinn. Those are my favorite comics.
And have you gotten to work with some of those guys at this point, I'm sure?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Colin Quinn's actually a personal friend now. Dave Attell, I've worked with 1,000 times. He's a friend. Bill Burr, I don't know too well. We've met, and, you know, of course, I know him, and but, you know, when I see him, we say hello. But, yeah, Jim Carrey, I've never met. You know, Sam Kinison's dead. But Colin Quinn and Dave Attell are, you know, Colin Quinn is actually like a real friend. So that's pretty cool for me.
No, oh, I bet. Now, you know, you mentioned how it was important for your family that you had a degree to fall back on. What was their reaction when you said, oh, you know what, I'm going to start doing some comedy, see what happens?
I mean, initially, you know, my mom was not happy. And she was like, you know, I think like any other parent, like she just wants their child to be successful and safe. So I don't think that she wasn't happy in the beginning. But then I did, in like 2013, I did David Letterman, and I did stand up on the David Letterman show, and John Travolta was the other guest. So she got to meet John Travolta. So it was like, then she forgot about me leaving. But my dad never had any doubt from the beginning. If I'm being honest, like my dad was all about like, hey, look, like you want to do this, do it. Like a lot of people are going to not believe in you. He said, but you know, my dad said, you know, he always wishes he took more chances when he was young, and he did it, and he regrets it. So he was like, I don't want that for you. So just take a chance now, and at least you'll have no regrets. Even if it doesn't work out, you can at least say you tried. So he really pushed me a lot in the beginning, which, you know, I was thankful for.
Now, what's it actually like starting out? Like, how does that process go? Because there's not really a guidebook or anything like that. You're just like, okay, I'm going to get up on stage and I guess I write some funny stuff that I think is funny?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's, you know, like, you know, I played basketball in college and it's like, look, my jump shot will get better if I'm taking 1,000 jump shots a day. It's an objective thing. It makes sense. You may not make the NBA or professionally, but like you will get better. Comedy is like you can get on stage every single day. If you're not innately funny and if you aren't born with like that mind that sees comedy, then it's just not going to work. And there's no saying who's going to make it, quote unquote, and who's going to not. I mean, there's plenty of funny guys I know, funny comedians I know, guys and girls, funny comedians that just haven't really, that they're still doing a day job in Comedy at Night because they just haven't caught a break yet. But in the beginning, yeah, it was doing open mics. I would do, you know, the only way to get on shows, like real shows, because open mics in New York City, especially, is like the audience is other comedians. So like they don't care. They're not listening. Everyone's just trying to make it on their own. So it's really tough crowds, and it kind of like, you know, it sharpens your skills for sure to come up and do the open mic scene in New York. But the only way I could get on stage would be either handing out flyers for the club during the afternoons and then going on stage at like 1 o'clock in the morning for 5 people, but at least there were 5 actual paying audience members and not comedians. Or you could do bringer shows where you would bring, you know, whatever the club asked, 5 people, and then they would give you 5 minutes at the end of the show or 5 minutes somewhere in the show. Or your friends, if your friends had shows, like because I was a physical therapist, I would barter my physical therapy skills to try to get spots on their shows. Like I would take a look at their knee or elbow or neck or something because nobody had health insurance and they would give me a few minutes on the show. So that's how it started. You know, I didn't get paid for a set until maybe 3 years into comedy. And, you know, and that's why I think like, you know, if you're going to make it in stand-up, the ones who really don't want to do it get weeded out quickly because, like, who's going to work for free for 3 years? You know, I mean, it's just people work for free longer. I actually started to make money relatively quickly because most people don't get paid until 5 years into their comedy career. Some of them never get paid. So in the beginning, it's hard. I mean, I would, you know, work, you know, have to be up at work at 7 a.m., work my day job till 3 or 4, and then do comedy from 5 p.m. to 2, 3 in the morning and wake up and do it again every day.
You have to love it. You have to really want to do it.
Have to. You have to. There's no other way. I mean, the money comes second. You know, I mean, it's passion first. The money comes second and something like that. So if you're in it for the money, then, you know, it's unless you get really, really, really lucky, I mean, you're just not going to make money in stand-up until a few years into the career, if you ever make money.
Right. Now, do you like the aspect of stand-up comedy where it's like you really have to do everything for yourself, especially when you're starting out? You're obviously your own writer, your own performer, but you're also kind of your own booker, your own agent.
Yeah, you're a business. I mean, you're a walking business, and I like it personally because I got no one to blame but myself. If things don't go well on stage or if I didn't do something, it's not like I'm part of a comedy team or, you know, any kind of team. It's like it's me. If I didn't produce and I didn't make that crowd laugh, it's on me. So I like that, having like I don't have to blame this on anyone else but myself. I like that feeling, and I just feel like, yeah, like with, you know, like, you know, I have a manager and an agent now and all that stuff, and it's like, you know, there's a saying like managers and agents get 10% of the money because they do 10% of the work. Like it's all on me to get things, and I'm in control of my own career. I push the gas and the brakes, and I have to know how to do all of that. I don't really rely on anyone. I have a lot of people I go to for advice and lean on, manager, agent, publicist, lawyer, all that stuff for questions, and it's nice to have a team. But in reality, it's what I do or don't do that's going to dictate how far my career goes.
Absolutely. So, you know, something we talk a lot about over here at Entrepreneur is this idea that a lot of times, in order to have success, you have to have failure. You have to have been faced with, you know, things not working out. Can you think of maybe a poor performance you gave or something like that that you really, well, it might have probably really sucked at the time, you kind of learned a lesson from it or something that, well, I'm not going to be doing that again?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, like, you're never going to be successful. The most successful people have the most failures. I really believe that because that's the only way to learn. Like, I never really learned anything from listening to comedy sets where I crushed. I only learned what jokes didn't work when I didn't do well. But yeah, I had a pilot with CBS 2 years ago that we filmed, but it didn't get picked up. And what I learned was to, like, trust my gut. I didn't trust my gut enough. I mean, I basically did everything CBS told me to do in the hopes that they would pick up my show. And I did everything they told me to do, and that my show still didn't get picked up. And it was a failure for me. But what I learned from that is to trust my gut and, you know, still be able to work with people and take advice from people and, you know, all that stuff and be able to work on a team. But if it feels wrong in my gut, then I'm just not going to ever agree to it. And so now I have another opportunity. I'm developing a cartoon for Comedy Central about my life. And I know whether it gets picked up or not, I know when I see the finished product, I'm going to have trust in my gut on it. So that's one thing, like, where I think, like, a failure at CBS is going to help me long term, because I learned a valuable lesson to trust myself more.
Absolutely. Now, that sounds interesting. What kind of area of your life does it focus on, the cartoon? Like, when you were a kid more or a little older?
It may have some flashback. It may have some flashbacks to my cartoon, but right now it's focused on me and my daughter and, like, raising, like, being like a white guy trying to raise a Puerto Rican daughter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, and with my dad, you know, like, living with my dad and trying to, you know, help my dad out and help him navigate around how to raise a little girl, you know, and, you know, different aspects of, like, what goes on in my, you know, family life and personal life that I choose to talk about in my comedy.
Right. So it seems it kind of leads into what I was going to ask next, which is where you get your material from. And clearly it's just straight up from your life, just having watched, you know.
Yeah, it's just my life, man. I mean, I'm the kind of comedian who I choose. I don't comment on anything politically. I'm not that guy that wants to, like, change your mind about a topic when you see me on stage. I just want you to forget about whatever you're dealing with in your life for an hour and just laugh at me and with me and whatever. But, like, kind of tell you my story and hopefully you can compare it to yours and just laugh at it. That's my goal in comedy.
Now, just to kind of get down a little bit more to the nuts and bolts of it, do you write down ideas when they strike you, or do you set down a specific amount of time? Like, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to write for, you know, an hour. Like, what's your actual process like?
I personally write. I have a notebook on me at all times, or I have my, you know, cell phone, my notepad, and anything that makes me laugh, I write it down. And especially something that makes somebody else laugh, I'll write it down. Usually my comedy comes to me for some reason when I'm walking alone or when I'm driving alone and on, like, a highway, or I usually, that's when I start to think of jokes. But I do try to at least sit down for 5 minutes every single day and write. And sometimes the 5 minutes is an hour. Sometimes it's just 5 minutes. But I have a thing in my head where at least for 5 minutes I try to think about jokes.
And the editing process, is it you rewrite and rewrite and then perform, or do you just kind of perform it and see how it goes and go from there?
Exactly. I perform it. I kind of let the audience edit it for me. I perform it. And then, you know, if a joke does, for me, like, in my head, if a joke doesn't work 5 times in a row, then I, you know, go back to the drawing board on it. But, like, because crowds are different. Like, just because one crowd doesn't laugh at it doesn't mean you have to lose that joke. So I feel like that's kind of how I do it. I kind of just 5 times I give the joke to see, you know, if it's working or not. But I always perform it and I kind of edit on stage.
Do you find that audiences differ a lot, like, depending on whether you're, let's say, in different parts of the country, if you're in New York, LA, somewhere else?
Of course. I mean, I could do the same set at an 8 o'clock show and a 10 o'clock show and get completely different responses. I mean, the audience is like its own living, breathing organism that you got to, you know, perform for and, like, kind of understand it. You know, I mean, I know if, like, certain joke, if I'm pushing the envelope and, like, doing jokes about, like, my dad calling me gay because I eat blueberry yogurt, like, if those aren't getting laughs up front, it's like, okay, we have a little bit more PC kind of
right.
Tight crowd, so let's go to these other jokes, you know, and let's, you know, I mean, look, some comedians choose to be like, hey, fuck you, you know, whatever, this is my comedy, you're going to listen, or I don't care, and I get that, that's cool, but I also, like, I'm like, hey, these people pay money, so, like, I'm entertainment for them. So, like, I try to find a happy medium and be like, okay, maybe I won't do the other jokes that went along with this. I'll switch it to something else.
Interesting. So you'll just kind of be on the fly, kind of see, you know, what the audience is reacting to and kind of homing in on that.
Exactly.
that's what I try to do, man. I try to be in the moment. Like, you'll never hear me say, here's my next joke or let's start the jokes. Like, I'm in the moment the whole time. I try to be, you know, and I try to just have natural conversation, just spin into some of my material, do crowd work into my material. I try to, that's my style. That's what I like. That's what I like to perform, and that's what I like to watch.
So I want to ask about the experience of making your hour-long special, Size 38 Waist. How was that? Was it as what you were hoping it would be, the whole experience of it, or how'd it go?
Yeah, no, I was certainly happy with it. I'm happy with the way it came out. I got to film it in Brooklyn in front of my friends and family. So I really enjoyed the whole process of it. And now I'm going to do a second hour special at the end of this year or early 2020 that, you know, hopefully is like even better and even more thought out and tight. Because, you know, I mean, I watch myself and, you know, I'm my own worst critic. So, like, I found a lot of mistakes in it. But I think overall it's been received well. And I'm certainly happy with, like, that being my first ever special.
Where was the performance in Brooklyn?
It was at this place called Roulette. It was on 3rd Avenue in downtown Brooklyn, like right off Atlantic Avenue. So it was, you know, cool place to do it.
And that's where you grew up, right?
Yep. I grew up in, like, Queens, Brooklyn area. So it was good to be close to home.
That's great. That's great. And I watched some of the clips of Stupid Questions. Really funny. Can you just tell folks a little bit about that who might not be familiar with it?
Yeah, you know, thanks, man. Yeah, Stupid Questions is on Friday nights on Comedy Central at 11, and it's just to show that Comedy Central really created that I just auditioned for and got the part where we just sit down with comedians or people in entertainment, you know, and I just ask them stupid questions that mean nothing, like not anything serious, it's just like, you know, where else would your nipples be on your body if they weren't on your chest? Like, things that don't matter, and just make them think about stupid things, and that's it. And that's the whole show.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It's really funny. And you mentioned before about how kind of, I guess you could maybe say your break was being on Guy Code and Girl Code on MTV, right?
Yes. I feel like that's the first time I got a chance to showcase what I could do to, like, a wider audience was MTV's Guy Code and Girl Code. And, yeah, without getting that first break, I wouldn't have anything. So, you know, you got to catch one. You got to, you know, and I haven't hit it, you know, huge yet. But for me, like, making it is just being able to provide for my family. And I can do that with where I'm at now. So I would take what I have now every year over and over and over again.
Yeah, I bet. That's great. Now, what kind of advice would you have for someone who's thinking about doing stand-up comedy?
My advice for them would be starting stand up. It's really hard. It really, really, really is hard. Don't be deterred. You know, if you think it's funny, then say it. You know, the PC police are everywhere nowadays, so they're going to try to silence you. Don't let them. Just keep going. If you think it's funny, then just go for it. You know, if you believe in it, and you have to deal with the repercussions regardless. So I'd say, you know, and stick with it and, you know, understand that in the beginning, there's going to be a lot of people that doubt you and don't think you're going to be able to make it because it's a really hard profession. But as long as you believe in yourself, then, you know, you may make it, you may not make it. But if you want to try it, then just know that it's going to be hard, but just try it. Like, don't stall, because I stalled for years, came up with this excuse and that excuse. You're always going to be able to find an excuse not to do it. And don't be afraid to bomb. Bombing is where you're going to learn everything, and you'll get used to bombing. And now it's like I actually have more fun when I'm bombing than when I'm doing well, because it's hilarious to me.
That's amazing. That's just like, I guess you just have that confidence that comes with having done it so long that you know it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, it's just like everybody bombs. It's like, it's fine. You know, if you can gracefully bomb, then that's a good thing. You know, and as a matter of fact, that's kind of the sign of a professional. When I did my David Letterman audition, I was doing well with the jokes, but they wouldn't book me. They only booked me when they saw my audition bomb. They watched that same set over the course of months and months and months, and one time it did really poorly, but I just stayed committed and I stayed fun with it, and then they booked me because they were like, you know, we needed to make sure that if something went haywire live on TV, you wouldn't, you know, flip your shit and run away from the material and do something. We have to make sure that you could bomb professionally. And it was good. And that so it's going to happen.
I like that. The idea of gracefully bombing. I think that's a really great lesson for everybody. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time here to talk to us and for joining us. And we're really excited to see what you got going on this year.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Have a great day.
All right, bye. All right, you too. Bye-bye.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of the show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.